And hello everyone, welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, co-host, Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
I'm your co-host, host, Scotty Hertz. Adam, it's so dark, I don't know.
So dark?
It's dark when I wake up, it's dark when I leave here, it's dark. Waiting for the light, I guess, eh? This is the longest night, isn't it?
What do you want me to do about it?
I want you to get a light bulb, walk around behind me, and then everything will be okay.
Okay. If I, my fee for that is $29 an
hour. Oh, well, that sounds about right.
It's called a living wage. It's called a living well wage.
Just build the station.
Excellent. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can listen to us live online, too. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. You can listen to us anytime as well by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. So today, we have started the holidays a wee bit early. So in order to give us that freedom, we are doing our third annual political movie special today. So, yeah, we are talking all about movies, so you have not accidentally tuned into End Credits, which is now a full-time movie show that I do. Thanks for listening, by the way.
This bit kind of evolved into End Credits, didn't it? It's like, hey, you know what?
This is so great, I might as well do it every week. I don't know what happened.
Soon you're going to have nine shows. You're never going to leave.
I'll have nine shows, yeah. I'll
midnight set up to seven, just do nine shows in a row.
I'll set up a bunk bed. We'll convert one of the new cubbies down the hall into a little dorm or something. We'll figure it out.
Somebody will.
Oh, for sure. Anyway, so yeah, if this is your first time listening to the political movie special, we look forward to it every year. We take one of the around Christmassy time shows and we choose two politically themed movies and we talk about them and talk about why we like them. I think I always let Scotty start.
Okay.
So I'm going to start. Because this is a movie, I don't know, have we done the best of, that will air next week, the best of special for end credits, the best of the year. And so this was a teaser, definitely made my list of the best of the year, and it is called Get Out, and it's Jordan Peele's feature directorial debut, and it is an absolutely chilling, haunting, socially conscious horror movie starring a young man, Daniel Kaluuya, who is British by birth, I think, but in this movie he plays Chris, who's a photographer. He's his girlfriend, Rose, who's played by Allison Williams, who people may be more familiar with if they've seen HBO's Girls. She played Marnie, I think. And... I know some stuff about Girls. Anyway,
hard to avoid. Yeah.
The show Girls. I mean, I know nothing about real life Girls.
But just gonna edit that out and use it. He knows something about Girls.
But so they're driving to Cape Cod or Long Island or one of these places. You know, these rich, affluent, white places where her parents live. Her parents are played by Bradley Whitford, who people will probably recognize as Josh from The West Wing, although he's 20 years older now. So, and then the mother is played by Catherine Keener, who been in a ton of things, too numerous to mention. But so he goes up there with his Rose. Obviously, he is black. So he has trouble fitting in, and of course, it's a community of like champagne liberals, I guess you'd call them, at least on the surface. And so Chris is, kind of caught off guard. You know, Rose's father says to him at one point, like, I would have voted for Obama three times, which is something you hear a lot of, supposedly woke white people might say. But of course. And this movie was made long before Trump won the election last year. But, of course, we now know that there are millions of people who voted for Barack Obama twice and then voted for Trump, which causes a lot of people headaches because how could you support the man who spent 5 years in a racist prosecution of the first black president after voting for the first black president twice? So, I mean, that's all front of your mind. But there's also this tremendous sense of dread. I mean, you go into it knowing it's a horror movie, but the dread is there on screen. And it's not just the concern about like supernatural horrors or genre related horrors. one of the first scenes is them driving to the parents' house and they accidentally hit a stag.
Hmm.
And so they call the police, you know, being two city people, they're like, oh, what do we do? Like,
call the police.
So they call the police. And of course, the police officer starts harassing Chris because, of course, he's black and in a white affluent area. So it immediately sets this tone that you're not sure where it's going. And I won't spoil where it ends up going. But it is very, very surprising indeed. But it speaks to one of the great things. And for the record, this finished, I think it finished on everybody on end credits top five somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's, you have four white people who all universally agree. This makes you feel terrified for every black person because, you know, this comes from a very visceral place, a very deep-seated place. And for something to put you in the position as privileged, perhaps overprivileged, white people, to put you into the perspective of the black experience in probably not just America, but, you know, let's say North America, is extraordinarily powerful. I know it's something I have not been able to stop thinking about since I saw this movie.
Wow.
And this came out earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Kaluuya, who's the main lead, I don't think enough can be said about his performance. There's the key scene is when he kind of is told the truth of the situation, and he's trapped. He's kind of trapped. He's being told, you know, what the deal is with all these. He meets a few black people, but there's something obviously wrong with them. And he's told the details of what's going to happen to him and what has happened to them. And the look on his face of just pure horror and the pure loss of like individuality and the betrayal and just like it just sort of typifies the black experience.
Mm-hmm.
And he manages to just play this in a single look and your just heart breaks for him. And it's just such an incredibly – that scene alone is incredibly moving and incredibly visceral. At least for me, it's impossible to look away. And to think this is all kind of wrapped up in the horror movie package. The horror movie, which is kind of like in a way one of the most dispensable mm-hmm. movie genres. But it can be so affecting when it's done right. And this is like it done really, really right. This was like – classic Twilight Zone level of
this is like the thinking person's horror movie.
Yeah,
and give me a rating because I have difficulty watching horror movies. It's just my nature.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of level of what's the gorometer? Is it like one or five? Somewhere in the middle.
90% of the film is a one, but the last 20 minutes are probably a 3.5.
Okay, well that's a good warning, I guess, for people that might
three
want to watch
three and a half. It's not terribly gory, I think. I think it's more unsettling than anything else.
As the Twilight Zone was. It wasn't a gory.
I mean, it's not. It's like if like one is Care Bears and five is like Saw, it's like more of a three.
Just picturing Care Bears with the Saw. I didn't watch Saw either, but.
It's not like it's not hostile or anything like gore, torture porn or anything like that. But it's I think the emotionalism in it and just how well Jordan Peele is able to like thread the needle in terms of reminding you of all these of all the sort of individual sort of racialized issues
mm-hmm.
and then boil it down into this one narrative and to have great actors in it on top of that, great characters. I think it's really an extraordinary movie, and it's a kind of a disservice that it was dumped into the best comedy, you know.
Weird,
I was thinking about this today, and it's like, for the Golden Globes to put this in the best comedy category, it's a bit like what happens to Daniel Kaluuya in this movie. I mean, not really, but I mean, it seems like a complete betrayal and a misunderstanding of what this movie is. So it's almost offensive that this is in the comedy category. Not that the Golden Globes really, or the Hollywood Foreign Press Association really care, because but
does it go in a funny direction at times? Are there like laugh out loud moments? Is that
no,
that macabre kind of. No, not at all.
Well, okay, like there's a
dark humor.
There's a comic relief character, Chris's friend. It works for the TSA, and there's scenes of him trying to, like, investigate why he can't reach his friend.
Oh.
But there's also like, but there's a heavy dramatic theme to that too, because what does he do? He goes to the police and they're like, oh, black guy missing. Whatever.
Oh boy.
Black guy telling us black guy missing. Well, that's something. But I mean, that so, you know, there's a social commentary in that as well.
That's interesting. You mentioned that the lead is from the UK, because there seems to be a lot of that in American movies these days, specifically with political films, where the lead characters, I'm thinking specifically of Selma, which I wasn't able to finish because they took it off of Netflix, but both Martin Luther King and I think Tim Roth is playing Lyndon Johnson. Like, over and over again, we see these British
Well,
actors.
Tom Wilkinson, British, was Lyndon Johnson. I think Tim Roth was George Wallace.
There you go. So, I didn't get to finish watching it. So
but it's the same for superheroes, right?
Yes.
Christian Bale, Welsh, was Batman.
Yep.
Henry Cavill, British, is Superman. The last two, Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield and Tom Holland, both British.
I'm surprised the Americans aren't complaining more. It's like, I have to make our actors great again by hiring. Oh, yeah, so, but.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. And Chiwetel, I've never, you can pronounce
Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Yeah, he's in everything too, right? And yet he.
Doctor Strange is British.
He's usually
right.
Playing an American as well. I've seen a couple times.
Idris Elba. His Asgardian, so whatever.
We've covered them all, but yeah, that's
Thor is Australian. Captain America is American, so we have that going for us. Anyway.
Yeah, if Captain America wasn't American, I think there'd be a problem.
Oh my goodness, can you imagine really if Captain America wasn't American?
Was Brie Larson playing Captain Marvel? We've totally
right.
deviated from
We've
this
deviated
film.
Deviated from Get Out. That's right. Yeah, no, she's Captain Marvel.
We're talking about the politics of acting, and in that...
Also, Chadwick Boseman is not Wakandan. Black Panther reference.
So. Oh, there you go.
Anyway.
I feel like I've stepped into an episode of End Credits, even though I...
Almost.
Yes, almost.
Let's get back on track with your
yes.
first pick.
My first pick came out this past year. Or sorry, late last year. It's called I, Daniel Blake. I think it's been a while since I picked a Ken Loach. I picked Suffragette last year, which was kind of Loachy, but wasn't a Ken Loach.
It was Loachy. I can't wait for that to enter the lexicon.
Loach-esque. Anyway, it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes in 2016. So, and of course, you've never heard of it. No, that's not totally true, but it got a little bit of traction. It didn't get as much as, say, other Ken Loach films like The Wind That Shakes the Barley, which I think everybody saw.
Mm-hmm.
Short version, there is no short version. Daniel Blake is the lead character in this. He's a carpenter and he's off of work. He lives in Newcastle, UK, which is in the north. And as Loach does, he takes people who are, there are some bona fide actors in this, but Dave Johns, who's playing Daniel Blake, is a comedian by trade. He's also a bricklayer by trade. So he fits, you know, two of Ken Loach's criteria where he tends to cast working people. But Johns, as Daniel Blake, is very good. He's a carpenter. He's laid off work. He had a heart attack, and his doctor says he's not able to work. But the work shy. They call you work shy in the UK when there's an implication that you don't want to work because something has happened, and there's mm-hmm. this, they're trying to get you back to work. His doctor has said he can't work, and he has to navigate the benefit system, which has become a fairly big bureaucratic wall in the United Kingdom. Very difficult. They sort of approach it from a negative. And this the entire film is based on real events, real people's testimony and things that have happened. So rather than, I think there was a time in the UK where they just gave you the benefits and whatever, but there's the particularly conservative governments were implying that you aren't willing to work. So they're like, they make you jump through all of these hoops. And the problem with that is that there are people that really need the benefits but can't get them, and they'll throw up a wall. So anyway, he's trying to navigate the system. In doing that, he befriends a single mother named Katie, played by Hayley Squires, who was in, I think she was in Call the Midwife, which I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
But you would know Hayley Squires if you saw her, a single mom with two kids who has been relocated from London, which is about 300 miles away. So it would be the equivalent of going from, say, Toronto up to, I don't know, Sudbury. Just because there's no housing available in London. But, I mean, in reality, in London, there's plenty of housing available. It's just a lot of it is being kept empty.
Or if you've got a lot of money.
Or if you've got a lot of money, of course. Or you're an investor of some kind. So yeah. They end up friends, trying to navigate the system together. And it's one of those. Ken Loach is a social realist in the way he delivers or the way he makes movies. And it's impossible. Put it this way. There's a scene in this film with a food bank, which is a very common thing for people on benefits anywhere in the world. And I tell you, if it doesn't affect you somehow, you have absolutely no heart. Loach uses certain tricks to make scenes very realistic. And I'm telling you, it's very gripping. About 50 years ago, Ken Loach's first film was made for TV, called Kathy Come Home. Very similar to this film. He's kind of gone back in time a bit and referenced. They don't directly reference this movie, but it's very similar. Kathy Come Home, you can find on YouTube quite easily. There's a lot of similarities to this. Kathy Come Home was so effective back in 1960, I think it was 67, that two charities sprung up almost overnight in Britain to deal with issues of homelessness and people on benefits. One of them is called Shelter. They're fairly, it's a fairly well-known charity there. I'm not sure what the equivalent would be in Canada, but that's how effective this kind of stuff is. And this film, I think, had a similar effect. As I said, it won the award in Cannes, but it got a lot of traction in terms of being reflective of the situation in the UK when governments lean towards austerity. And I think the Brexit is also going to throw another wrench into it. Did they reference that directly? I don't think so, but
might have been if it came out. I mean, if it was at Cannes last year, it would have been Brexit. What is that month?
Oh, no, it was happening. I'm just saying, I don't know if they directly reference it in the film, but in terms of the fallout that's going to happen in the UK post-Brexit, which is probably going to see a lot more people, regardless of what they're told, maybe not necessarily UK nationals, but the people from other countries that will, you know, have to come up with another means or somehow to stay there. And they haven't sorted all that out yet too. So it's a big political football.
Well, it's worth noting the area that this takes place in, the north of England, was a pro-Brexit area.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, you know, outside of metropolitan London, it was mostly Wales and the rest of England that voted Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're talking about people being affected and these working class areas being affected, but I mean, these are also the people who are kind of, I don't want to say bilked, but I will, bilked into believing things mm-hmm. like, if we get out of Brexit, your job will come back. If we get out of free trade agreements, your job will come back. You know, if we start, you know, rounding up all the illegal immigrants, your job will come mm-hmm. back, and that kind of thing.
And that's, I mean, they play into it like a lot. The jobs have been gone for a long, long time. A lot of these places have been, let's say, near destitute, especially the larger centers like Newcastle, Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool for the longest time. You name any northern city, like north of London. London is like almost a different planet, really. and then, of course, you edge up Newcastle way, you're edging into Scotland. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's in the era of Trump as well. And I know we sort of have Trump is a little bit off limits for our holiday shows, but that's the kind of thing where the promises are made.
Trying to make them off limits for our regular shows, too.
You probably heard the phrase. Yeah, exactly. You probably don't say. He did not be named.
45.
Mr. T. No, I can't call him Mr. T either. Anyway.
No, don't besmirch the life of Mr. T.
I pity the fool that.
that's right.
You probably heard the phrase taking coals to Newcastle. Newcastle was a coal mining community, and there were lots. This pure industrial revolution kind of stuff. And you hear it when the 45 says things like, well, we're going to bring back coal. And
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say there's absolutely no hope for these towns and cities, but they've been given a degree of false hope. And as you said, I mean, a lot of them were very pro-Brexit. But as to whether it's going to help the situation, I don't really think so. And all that is all.
That's all background to what the main story is.
Background and reflected in
yeah.
in films such as I, Daniel Blake or even Kathy Come Home.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. What else can I say about it? It's on Netflix. I saw the bookshelf.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Netflix now, okay, yes. Cool. Only just. But we saw it at the bookshelf a few months ago. It may come back in rep cinema. And the funny thing was, and I started laughing right away and I was getting some looks. The subtitles were on the whole time. And I just did this. But if I don't know if you know the northern accent, but I mean, if you have trouble with Scottish, Never mind Scottish. The Newcastle accent is something else. Well, so I can understand why the subtitles was on, were on, because a lot of the people in it weren't necessarily actors and they're just kind of talking. As a, yeah, I can see why it's on, but
I can't.
I laughed.
I can't remember what I was watching, but it had, I think it was on Netflix or something, but it had like really basic French in it, and there were subtitles, and it's like, I don't need the subtitles. I get like, I can translate one or two lines
that's
of French.
Say, no, yeah, that's
perfectly,
right. Yes, exactly,
reasonably myself. But yeah, some of those accents, yeah, subtitles, please.
So yeah, I got some glares for laughing, but I think there were quite a few people there from the UK, English in particular.
Well, there are a lot of people like that who live in town, yeah, and will definitely make the latest Ken Loach film. What I find interesting about this is that, you know, there's pretty strong political connections. I mean, maybe not intentional. One is intentional, one isn't. But Jeremy Corbyn, of course, ran pretty hard on the basis that the austerity was having a really deleterious effect on people in the UK, and that some of those shackles should come off.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of his main plank. And then the other one, I read that, because unfortunately I didn't get a chance to see it. If I had known it was on Netflix, I might have tried to put it on. But
holiday viewing.
It sounds like holiday viewing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds very heartwarming. But the former the former pension secretary, which is, I guess, the person who's in charge of pensions, said that the film was unfair to the job center staff. I guess that's in that scene where he's dealing with...
What's in the preview?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where he meets Katie. But yeah, there's...
But it was really unfair, says the guy who used to oversee that department.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all been in situations like that where we come face to face with the bureaucracy. And they do a pretty good job of it, because Daniel Blake is the kind, he's an older gentleman, has no technical skills.
Yeah.
And yet, and this happens a lot where they're like, well, just go to the internet, which is easier for people to say under, not to be ageist, but, you know, there's a certain cutoff there where it's like, it's no problem for somebody to manipulate computers and cell phones and all that. And yet you've got somebody like this who has never, ever worked a computer. And if you watch the preview, you'll see that, you know, move the mouse on the screen and actually physically grabs the mouse and puts it. I'm not giving away too much, I guess, when I say this, but
spoiler,
puts the mouse on the screen and tries to. And it's actually, I know that.
Spoiler, old man doesn't know how to use computer.
Yeah. I don't know if Get Out didn't have any funny moments, but Daniel Blake, the humor is very, it's dark, yet it's still, you know, you can see where you get the impression that there are moments in it where the actors, the people in the film who they're playing, find it funny just in that kind of ironic way, like, what the hell is going on with my life? So,
well, that's, I mean, it's the bitter truth of the matter that you're asking people who, you know, don't have no experience and probably no opportunity. I mean, I don't know what it's like in these places, but I mean, if things are sort of that bad, how many libraries are there that you could go and use the computer?
Oh, and of course, with anything too, the councils are closing libraries for cost-saving measures, so that's getting worse. And as I said, Katie and her two kids, single moms, relocated to nowhere near London.
Where then it becomes harder to find a job.
But also, I mean, you've got a nation where I think people are living on generally something, if you're single or whatever, it's like £70 a week benefits, but people are making like over £300,000, getting, you know, a childcare break and all sorts of tax breaks. It's, mm-hmm, again, like what's going on in the States, where it's like, oh, we're going to reduce your taxes. It's like, yeah, but that's, you know, it's not trickle down at all. It's just trickle up to the rich. So...
Well, we don't know, because they had a big signing party at the White House and then Trump didn't take any questions, so...
Oh, right.
Because that was actually just yesterday, was that this of course, they're passing that thing so fast, and we're getting some actual real politics into our movie show, but there you go. They passed that thing so fast and furiously that they had a procedural screw-up in the Senate that had to force the House to have a revote on Wednesday morning, and of course that sailed through, and you have... Just like deeply cynical people like Bob Corker on the way out the doors, like, yes, I will take that tax exempt for real estate developers. Thank you.
Of course.
And instead of, you know, Mr. I don't want to pass a tax bill that raises the deficit one dime. But I mean, it's even worse in the UK, because at least nobody in the US is talking about cutting entitlements yet.
Well, there's also, speaking of housing, there's a lot of MPs in the UK that own houses. They had a massive social housing scheme that was torn apart in the Thatcher years and chipped away at it with subsequent governments.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal was you could buy these flats that were supposed to be for, you know, it was presumably supposed to be your own. You could buy your own house. It's like, oh, you should own your own house. But of course, as with anything, it's like whoever's got the cash buys the houses. So everybody, not everybody, but certain people with money have been accumulating these. And it's like a lot of MPs, mostly conservative, but of all parties, have real estate interests. And of course, then you become a landlord and you're making these decisions about social housing, yet you know, it's a massive conflict of interest. Yet somehow they get away with it. surprise.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. But
when did you get into Ken Loach, by the way?
It was by accident. You know, years ago, TV Ontario was a lot different. They would just show, I think they would just show whatever. And they used to have movie of the week. And he made his, I think about, his first feature film was a film called Kes, which was about a young boy, again, poor neighborhood, the usual thing, and he raises this bird, a kestrel. And my mother was watching it. She would watch, obviously, anything from the homeland, right? And but it was, even for its time, you know, films moved at a different pace back in the day, very kind of slow, and I think that's why certain people, a lot of people, find it difficult to watch older films. And I didn't know for years it was Ken Loach. It was actually a couple of people who were on Coronation Street were in this film, and I think that's why my mother watched it. So then I, you know, just as the years went on, I was like, hey, it's a Ken Loach movie. It's a Ken Loach movie. and they've shown a few over the years. I don't think they do anymore. No one would stand for it. No, you just watch them on Netflix.
No.
There's not that many on Netflix. But no, but of course, I think I mentioned this before. The in town, your former employer,
Thomas.
I was gonna say the bookshelf. Sorry, the bookshelf shows them second run sometimes, but Thomas had a Ken Loach section.
Yeah,
of which I bought two or three when it closed down. R.I.P.
Yeah.
But R.I.P. Thomas, because that. So if you were wondering when I got whole hog into Ken Loach films, it was when we had no cable, but we had a VHS player. Dun dun dun. And that's when I crammed him.
Yeah, he's like one of the last, I think, of a certain kind of British filmmaker. Him and, you know, another one comes to mind is Lindsay Anderson, who I think is past. But, I mean, they're very, like, very realistic, down-to-earth, character-focused, you know, very tight like that. And, you know, not many movies are made in that class anymore.
Yeah, and Ken Loach is 80-something, so he's getting up there. But he's also on my list of people to interview, so we'll see. I don't know if it's going to happen, but he's very difficult to get in touch with.
Oh, is he?
I had a brief with his press people, but really? It was like, Mr. Loach is very busy. Yeah, I know.
Well, he's still cranking out like a movie a year or every 2 years, so.
It's like, but you got a super fan in Guelph that wants to talk to you.
So, anyway. He does indeed. Maybe that's a New Year's resolution for us. I mean, we did have about, after next week when we have our show with our big interviews, we'll have had about 40 guests on this year. I
excellent.
Never say never. This is a destination interview show now. I don't care what anybody says. Anyway.
All are welcome.
Yes,
they are. Sorry. Most are welcome.
Alex Jones, you are not welcome.
No.
Anyway. Ken Loach, yes.
Come on by, Ken.
Michael Bay, maybe. so we're going to take a break here and then come back with our next two picks. We're just going to play a little CanCon for you, some recent CanCon from a band called Casper Skulls, the new album Mercy Works, and this is a song called Faded Sound, and it had fade and sound in it, which are movie terms, so hey, why not? You're listening to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
But
And we're back. And in case you are tuning in late, and if you are, why even bother? That was Faded Sound by the Casper Skulls, Mercy Works, and they are ranked on the CFRU chart, so check them out.
We only play ranked bands on this show.
They better be ranked. Ranked or get the F out. Anyway.
He's a harsh taskmaster, this Donaldson fella.
It's very true. Which is why it's going to be all the more surprising for my next pick. So, for my second political film, I went with something unusual. It is an Adam Sandler movie. It is called...
I couldn't hold it.
You Don't Mess With the Zohan.
Oh, boy.
And the plot is as follows. Adam Sandler plays Zohan, who is evidently a superhuman agent for the Israeli Defense Forces. He is an exceptionally competent counter-terrorist agent. He gets into a Mugglebox Falls sort of struggle with his Palestinian arch-nemesis, Phantom. He fakes his own death and secretly comes to New York and the United States to start a new career as a hairdresser. He goes by the alias Scrappy Coco. And it was the origin of the name is that it was the name of two dogs. He was he squirrels himself away, pun not intended, in a cargo hold of a plane. And so he was in there with two pets named Scrappy and Coco, and the rest takes care of itself. He tells people he's half Australian, half Mount Everest, and so he goes about trying to find a career being a hairstylist in New York. Unbeknownst to him, there is an evil real estate developer afoot who is trying to redevelop this block in New York where a lot of immigrants hang out. He wants to turn it into like a mini mall and a hotel and other assorted things. And so he's going about trying to lower property values, and his ultimately hiring white supremacists to, to lay waste to the block and burn it down. In hopes that, he might, you know, cause, some of the Palestinian Americans to get mad at some of the Jewish Americans. And, then he can come in and buy this real estate up for cheap to build his garish buildings, because I will say again, he's an evil real estate developer. So
are there any non-evil real estate developers?
I'm sure there's one or two.
There might be one.
So, you know, into this situation is Scrappy Coco, aka Zohan, who joins the neighborhood watch, ends up being a thorn in the developer's side, and of course, it reaches the ears of Phantom back in the Middle East that Zohan is still alive. And so all this sort of comes together in a nice little Sandalian package, shall we call it. You know, it's an Adam Sandler movie, so, I mean, don't expect any, like, big messages. But one of the things It's an interesting pick. Yeah. I'm not a huge Adam Sandler hater. I mean...
Because a lot of people really don't like him.
A lot of the stuff he does is straight up BS.
Garbage. Yeah.
But there are times, Billy Madison, Mr. Deeds, I think, Click has its moments, but Zohan, where he seems to be reached, and of course Adam Sandler too, he could make a very fine career just doing these stupid films of his. Mm-hmm. But there are moments where it seems to occur to him, I can do more. Something like PTA's Punch Drunk Love, or the one that just came out on Netflix, The Meyerowitz Stories, which he's very good in. Zohan, of course, is very much in this Sandalian mode, as I said. I'm patenting that later on the internet, so nobody take it before I get home. it's directed by, I can't remember his name. I wrote it down too. But I mean, there are a couple of key people that Adam Sandler goes to. And the one who did it is Dennis Dugan. Another one is like Stephen Brill, and then Frank Coraggi kind of round out the triumphant. But this is a Dugan one. I think he's worked the most with Sandler. He's done the, he did the two Grown Ups films. He did Chuck and Larry. He did Jack and Jill. He did Big Daddy. So, you know, Sandler's working with someone he knows well and knows his comedy. The interesting part, though, is that one of the names on the screenplay is Judd Apatow.
Oh.
So this was...
who everything touches turns to, not necessarily gold, but...
Exactly. So there was
a name.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was once some ambition to this. Apatow, I don't think Apatow was on the finished screenplay, but this started like around 2000, and then 9/11 happened, and everyone was like, well...
It's that, really?
Yeah.
And what year was this released again?
Oh, wait.
Okay, so it's a bit aged.
It's 10 years old. Well, it will be next summer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's... I admire the ambition of it. I admire like the message of it about, you know, at the end, like everyone has like the realization, you know, they Phantom and Zohan in particular, that, you know, everybody comes to the United States to, you know, to essentially leave all the crap in the home country behind and mm-hmm. to make a new life, and that it's not about, you know, who's Palestinian and who's Israeli and that thing. You know, everyone was there to, you know, hawk cheap electronics or cut hair or sell shoes.
Drive a cab? Does that
drive a cab? Yeah. Drive a cab.
I haven't seen this, but I know driving a cab must come up. Yeah.
Rob Schneider, who's one of Adam Sandler's regulars because they were both on
SNL
together. Together at the same time. Sadly, Rob Schneider's in brownface playing a Palestinian cab driver.
You could still do that in 08, but barely.
Yeah, I think
but barely.
So.
You wouldn't now.
But... But he plays a cab driver who has like a history with Zohan. In fact, he's the one who recognizes Scrappy Coco as Zohan,
phones home and says, "Hey."
He does phone Phantom at one point, and the scene is hilarious, and it has nothing to do with like the ethnicity or Schneider playing brownface, but it has to do with, of all things, dialing long distance.
Oh,
there's this
too many numbers.
It's just a great scene
using
where
a card.
He
yeah.
says this. What's the number? And so his friend starts giving him the number, and he starts dialing it, and you think he's done. And then
there's more.
there's more. And Schneider, I mean, Schneider gets a lot of crap, too, probably more than Sandler.
Oh, yeah.
But I love the way Schneider is, like, the way he reacts every time he thinks it's over, but it's not over with dialing the number. And it's a great little scene that makes me laugh every time, even though, again, Rob Schneider's in brownface. But... Anyway.
Well, we'll forgive him for that because of the times were different. It's not as bad as Mickey Rooney as a Chinese person in Breakfast at Tiffany's. I mean, that's
oh
the ultimate
goodness.
Worst example of that. But
well, it's like it wasn't even he was playing was he Japanese? Was he playing Japanese or Chinese?
Japanese, I think. Japanese photographer. Yeah,
okay,
probably.
But
I've blocked it out.
It's not. What makes it worse is that it's like Mickey Rooney playing. The Asian kid in 16 Candles playing that verse, like he's purposely playing a stereotype, and that makes it like it's just
painful
every
painful.
Time. Otherwise, it's such a great movie. But, you know, I appreciate. Of course, Phantom is played by John Turturro as well.
Oh, perfect! That's great.
John Turturro, of course, is another Sandler regular. I think between Sandler movies and Transformers movies, John Turturro is just like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he just like has enough money for life that he doesn't have to worry about.
Oh yeah,
you know if you know
Lebowski.
The acting. Well, I mean that's another thing is you know he works. I mean you probably work with the Coens for the love, but you do mm-hmm. the Sandler movies and the Transformers movies for the paycheck. But
oh yeah,
thus allowing you free time for the Coens. But it's you know. It's silly. I mean, the hummus jokes are like the first 57 are fine, but the 68 after that are excessive. But I think there was a message to it. And I think it was definitely, I think it's actually even more topical given that the villain in it is a real estate developer who goes to white supremacists to help initiate his evil scheme. Who does that sound like?
Yeah. covers a lot, and in New York too.
Yeah, in New York,
it covers a lot of the bases of things that are, you know, as current today as I was gonna, as they were in 2008.
Because <It's like,
laughs> it was so long ago. I remember 2008.
Back in 20-dickety-8.
Exactly. I think we're on a show called Beyond the Ballot Box.
I think that was even before Ballot Box. But I mean,
what political world were we living in then?
I know it was It was sad. It was, yeah.
Obama's re-election was away. Is that right?
That was, yes. Obama's first election, yeah.
First election, yes. So that's when it all changed.
I can't remember if that came up, but probably.
Probably not. If it was in the can in 08, then.
Yes, most definitely. But I mean, if you like the typical Sandler stuff, it's great. I mean, it's got all his buddies in it. Like Chris Rock has a cameo, John McEnroe has a cameo, Kevin James has a cameo. Of course, his love interest is Emmanuel Crickey, and she probably know her best from Entourage, the HBO show. Mm. She's actually a Canadian actress, but she's gorgeous. So naturally, Adam Sandler chooses her as his love interest. Which he usually does. Usually finds like the latest hottest actress to cast as his love interest. But there's a bit more going on than a typical Sandler movie, and
it's hard to believe, but I will. Check it out.
I mean, there's a bit more. It's finely tuned, but it's a bit more. And certainly, I think it shows him being more ambitious than he has been lately. I mean, up until Meyerowitz Stories, which came out a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you see any of his other Netflix offerings, like Ridiculous 6, it's clear, or Grown Ups 2, even.
I wouldn't touch it.
He's been phoning it in for a couple of years, so.
And is this on, I'm going to sound like an old man, is this on the Netflix as well, Adam?
It's a good question. I don't know if it's on
probably
Netflix.
Probably somewhere.
I know it's on demand right now.
Oh, okay.
Like if you get the Bell on demand,
or,
it's free.
Oh, not but, oh, okay.
But yeah, you can probably find it on iTunes and all over the place. It's
aged enough that it'll be out there somewhere. But
oh, absolutely.
But it's not in super high def.
It's not in 4K.
Do you know how many K this TV has?
Sorry, it's not in 4K.
I don't watch anything that's under 3K, man. What do people do with black and white films around this time of year? That's like they probably just.
I don't know. We're veering off topic again, but that's fine.
Still film.
I have a Blu-ray of the 51 Scrooge, and it's 4x3. So
look good.
Oh, like I
black and white and high def. I was
black and white and high def is typically very very good.
Sharpened it up.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, they have to make the transferal, but I mean, as long as you get past, if you remember like watching something Letterboxd with the black bars at the top and the bottom,
yeah.
Now if you're watching something old enough, it's the black bars on the side.
Your screen has gone back to the size it was back in 1951,
it's,
right?
It's, like, it's fascinating, but
79-inch TV,
but I find black and white holds up, old black and white holds up pretty good in high def. So
I wonder if it'll make a bit of a comeback. What was I talking about the other day? The Elephant Man.
Mm-hmm.
Which was 80s, but yet it was made in black and white. So
I think it was 1980.
1980, bang on.
Yeah.
Good year. But, yeah, so I was wondering now with the higher def, will people try and go back a bit? But, and again, we have veered completely off topic, but
yeah.
This is the technical portion of the show where we talk about resolution.
You now return to HD Talk here on CFRU. Anyway, your second pick.
My second pick... is a shortish documentary and it's just over an hour. It's called Saving Capitalism, subtitled For the Many, Not the Few.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, this is one of those rare occasions where I even utter the words saving capitalism. It wouldn't normally come out of my mouth. The star is Robert Reich, who is the Secretary of Labor for Bill Clinton. You would definitely recognize him if you saw him.
Mm-hmm.
He was Secretary of Labor from 91 to 97. He resigned in 97, and I'm not actually sure what he resigned over. Did it appear in the... I think he'd had enough.
It's possible. I mean, Labor Secretary is one of the more intensive cabinet positions, but I mean, at the same time, being in the presidential cabinet is probably very... There's a lot of pressure no matter what the position is, so, you know, you do tend to burn out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are very few Janet Renos in the world, right? No. I think Janet Reno was Attorney General for all 8 years, but...
So Reich is an economist, very well regarded and well spoken, and he was actually friends with Clinton back in the day when they were students. He takes credit for introducing Bill and Hillary, so that he has a very tight connection with the
Democrats. Creditor blame.
I said, hey, here comes Hillary, and then I think he dated her once too, but I don't get too much into this. What it reminded me of beyond the content was An Inconvenient Truth, where Al Gore is talking about climate change, but he's also talking, you know, there's bits and pieces of his life interspersed with the film itself. It plays exactly like that. So Reich has this thesis, is that capitalism as it exists now in the U.S. and in the world is broken. And he refers to it as crony capitalism, which is – and this it started to evolve during his tenure in the 90s when I think the corporate control of capitalism and business became so overwhelming in its relation to politics, so that the corporate realm was kind of dictating what was going on politically. And I think this may have been part of his resignation as to why he had to step back, because the changes that he wanted, which was more control and oversight over lobbyists and companies, was just effectively disappearing. This was under his his tenure as Secretary of Labor, but also as, you know, one of Clinton's crew. Clinton's crew, the Clinton posse. So what he's saying in this, I guess the short version, is that if the populace, as he calls it, are active and educated, they can be the driving force behind the change in capitalism. I'm not, and making it more benevolent, I guess.
Hmm.
I don't directly agree with this thesis, of course, as you can imagine. but if I can see what he's trying to say, and the beauty of it is that he reaches out to all sides, to use a Trumpism, but he does. He's able
many
to
sides.
Many sides,
many
all
sides.
The sides. he's able to kind of reach out to communities, not just from the business world. He has this sit down with people who are business leaders and entrepreneurs and small business types who everybody holds in the highest regard in America because they're self-made and I worked hard and I only had $10, that type. One of them starts spouting about how, you know, I'm a libertarianist. I shut down when people say that. I probably shouldn't, but it's like, okay, you got a lot of money. You're a libertarian. Yeah, whatever. But he also sits down with students. He sits down with farmers. It's one of those, the future is the children. He gets quite emotional when he sits down with the students and sort of talking about his life and saying, you know, the children are the future.
Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Exactly. interestingly, was the farmers, I don't remember what state they were in, but they were... When they spoke, they sounded liberal, yet one of them in the family was like admitted to voting Trump and the reasons why. But he also liked Bernie Sanders. And this is this weird thing that's going on in the States where, you know, they could both sort of go after your heart and your vote and you can see the both sides, the all sides. Mm-hmm. Yet Bernie Sanders and Trump, radically different. Yet somehow in some ways, I guess with the populist approach, they're kind of saying the same thing.
Right.
So will capitalism be fixed? Probably not just on the basis of this, but that is the great burning question.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth remembering that there are a lot of people who like what Bernie's have to say and they like what Trump has to say. The difference, I think, is that I don't think people... I think people know Trump from TV, like the reality show. I think this is something that has been explored a little, that a lot of people recognize Trump from, you know, the Trump show, basically. If you talk to people in New York, people who deal with Trump and have dealt with Trump, that, you know, they know he's a con man. They know he's not the business genius, the swashbuckling billionaire that he has sold himself as.
Several times bankrupted.
Right. Yeah. So when you go out into the middle of the country, how do they know Trump? Well, they know him. They knew him from The Apprentice. They knew him from, you know, maybe his cameo in such stellar movies as Home Alone and Home Alone 2 and that softcore porn he was inexplicably in. But wrestling appearances. I can't remember the name of the movie. They reviewed it on We Hate Movies and it was hilarious.
Yeah, because he's more of a concept than a man, really. It's like, oh, Trump.
Yeah, that's right? a great way to put it.
It's...
Whereas Bernie Sanders has, you know, several years in the quote-unquote swamp, fighting the good fight, as it were.
It's like almost 40, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting you compared it to Inconvenient Truth, because that was also what I thought. You said you didn't see Robert Reich's other documentary, which was Inequality for All.
No.
Because that also had an Inconvenient Truth feel, except about the economy. And it's interesting, too, that we got it. I don't know if I haven't seen Saving Capitalism yet, but it sounds like a sequel to Inequality for All.
It could be, yeah.
And then this year we also got a sequel to An Inconvenient Truth, an Inconvenient Sequel.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
have you seen that? Or no?
I did see that. We reviewed it on End Credits. It was okay.
It was okay.
It was, I mean, it's preaching to the choir, but...
Part of the beauty of this one is that it doesn't drag on too long.
Well, he may...
Like, this is a tight... It's reflective of... What happens is when you Google all of these things in your feeds, things start to come up, and Robert Reich seems to do a lot of these small bits about four ways I would fix this, four ways of... A little five-minute...
Yeah, like he's been doing...
mini TED Talk kind of thing.
Yeah,
I'm not sure why. I guess because he's an educator as well, right?
Like, yeah, he's at Berkeley, I
Berkeley,
think.
Yeah. So,
but he's been doing, yeah, what he calls resistance reports on YouTube. I mean, that's how people know. People probably also know him. He makes a lot of appearances on CNN where they force him to debate Steve Moore, who's one of these Trump people who just is so enamored with Trump that they can shape their universe into his pocket. It makes me so sad because Robert Reich has actually done things versus some of these Trump people who are known only for their support of Trump. It makes me sad.
Spread of fake news.
But it makes me sad. So Robert Reich's an interesting figure. He's very well spoken. I think he also has a lengthy career of advocacy and activism as well. And he's very personable. And I'm glad he kind of did this because I think, again, I hope it's not, again, having not seen the movie, but I hope it's not preaching to the choir. It's because I think that's what kind of disappointed me about Inconvenient Sequel. It was,
more of the same.
More of the same. Everyone who's going to see this movie knows the problem.
Yeah.
Knows the causes. But how are you going to get people on board who... it's a bit different with economy because, as we've seen, again, going back to this week's news, the tax bill they just passed is the most unpopular piece of legislation that's ever been passed.
Mm-hmm.
So people know this is, BS that it's going to help them and at the end of the day. I mean, suppose it does. I mean, there's a Hail Mary's chance, but most people are aware of this. And I think that,
And that's, therein's the problem with this type of film, which are always interesting to watch. Is the Inconvenient Truth or this, Reich makes the suggestions about, reduce corporate control of everything, smacking down the lobbyists, tightening campaign finances and everything will be great. The question is, the burning question, the same with climate change, how do we do that? You watch this film and it's a feel-good thing. It's like, yeah, we should do that. And then, but of course, it doesn't happen. The climate changes. It's still, in terms of corporate control of the American economy,
right.
I think we've hit like beyond peak of that right now.
Right.
This is at the top of the summit right now. It's never been more, top of mind, I guess. Everybody you look at in that administration, in addition to Trump, it's all about corporate control right now. It's gotten worse probably since this film was made. So when do we start going down the other side of the mountain? I don't know.
And the how part is interesting because Donald Trump proved that you don't need a how when you run, I guess, for national office in America. You don't need a how. Like his whole thing was, I'll do it and it'll be great. And everyone's like, yeah, I can believe that.
That's not fake news. 12 Diet Cokes later. Blah.
12 Diet Cokes.
Glass of water gingerly held and sipped in him. Oh, the glass. We weren't going to talk about Trump. It's unavoidable with us, though, because, Making Capitalism should be the other movie made by, I don't know.
Well, we're going to wrap it up, and then we're going to go have two Big Macs, two Filet-O-Fishes, and a chocolate malt.
Delicious.
It's called the full Trump.
Let freedom ring.
Oh my goodness.
Or just cholesterol.
Cholesterol ring. Sounds about right.
Through the veins of the nation.
So that is it for our holiday movies, or our political holiday movie special. We hope you liked it, and maybe you'll get a chance to check some of those out. Anyway, next Thursday we're going to have a pair of featured interviews for the mid holiday show. We're going to replace Scotty's Q&A with Amy Goodman when she visited Guelph back in October. And I will have my interview with Ron James, who recorded his annual New Year's Eve comedy show at the River Run Center, also back in October. And that will be airing on the CBC on New Year's Eve and then again on New Year's Day. But you'll be able to hear Ron James first here on CFRU. And then on January the 4th, we will have our annual award show. So stay tuned for that as well. In the meantime, because this is the last time we'll talk to you before Christmas, have a Merry Christmas and happy holidays, however you're spending it. We know not everybody celebrates Christmas, but you know, if you're not someone who celebrates, at least take the opportunity to enjoy some downtime and some alone time if you're going that way, or time with family if that's what you're doing. However it is, stay safe, and we'll be back here next week.
Hit the Netflix and watch all these films.
That's right. So avoid your family. Watch movies. Stay connected to us all week long at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and then find us on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on the Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, become my friend. Scotty Hertz on Twitter, follow me or whatever you do. And I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
Become Scotty's friend. Anyway.
Be my friend, I've peaked.
DJ Sounds Good to Me is here next on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And until next Thursday at 5 p.m., well, we'll be around, but we'll see you. Merry Christmas.